Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck abilities? What the fuck Tuckians? What the fuck Anavians? What is happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. If you're just joining us, I'm going to keep saying that just to annoy people that told me not to say it, because despite what you think, we get a lot of new listeners and they want to be welcomed properly. How welcome? Welcome to you on your bicycle, or at work, or on the train, or running in the air outside, or at a gym, wherever you are, down in the mines, digging up things, whatever you're doing, welcome if you're new. Today on the show, Lauren Lapkus. Do you know her? She has a podcast. It's called With Special Guest Lauren Lapkus. It's new every week. You can get on the Howl app or wherever you get your podcast. And she's funny, does characters and stuff. Before I forget, tickets are on sale. I think they're pre-sale today. Whatever that means, you don't need a code. But tickets for my Carnegie Hall show on November 4th at the New York Comedy Festival are available. I know it's a pre-sale today. I don't know what that means, really, but I know you don't need a code, so it doesn't matter. NYComedyFestival.com will link you to the Carnegie Hall site to get tickets for my November 4th show at Carnegie Hall. NYComedyFestival.com. Dig it. Carnegie Hall. Very exciting, right? God damn. Yeah, get some tickets if you're around. Make the trip. It'll be an event. It might be the last time. I don't know. Anyway, so that's that. How's it going? I'm not at a loss, but I'm not sleeping well. I don't know what's happening. Like, I get up all, you know, over and over in the nighttime. I get about 4 or 5 hours of sleep. I'm walking around in a daze all the time. It's weird, I guess, in that, you know, I don't have children to worry about their future. I have my future to worry about, but how long is that really? You know, that's sort of the area I'm in now. It's like, how much time do I got, and how much shit am I going to keep talking about doing that I never do? Why can't I just fix my house, people? These are grown-up things. I know it's anxiety. I know it's like, you know, I should do it. It would be nice, but there's some part of me just thinks, what's the point? Or I'll get to that. And I imagine that's what a lot of people do. You're going to get to it, and then you just never get to it. I got to make a list. Not really a bucket list, because that would be sad if my bucket list included, like, you know, fix the back stairs. That's one of your big got to do before I die things. Yeah, that's the saddest bucket list in the world. Fix back stairs so nobody hurts themselves. Close up area under house so animals don't crawl in there and die and shit. Fix the hole in the floor in the dining room where you pulled out the antique heater and now there's just a board there. Close up that weird cabinet in the hallway that used to be some sort of ancient old-timey hamper situation. Permanently close that up. Replace the window that was put in backwards in the second bedroom that you don't use except to hold some of your records. Boy, what an exciting bucket list, huh? Maybe fix wall in front of house where crack is that will ultimately lead to wall falling down. Perhaps change ugly linoleum tiles you put down in garage when you first put the floor in the garage and you had some dumb fucking idea in your head that it should look like a 1950s theme restaurant floor. Why didn't you get a little jukebox for the garage initially, you dumb fuck? It's quite a bucket list. Oh, yeah. And go to Scandinavia. That's my bucket list. Man, I hope I get to that stuff. I'm feeling pretty good because I just had my 17-year sober anniversary. That was on Tuesday. I do have a peace of mind to a degree. I'm happy to be doing what I want to do, but I gotta fix my bucket list. Seriously, that was a sad bucket list. Not even, you know, maybe take one of the first space flights. I'm not gonna do that. I'm nervous on roller coasters. I gotta tighten it up, man. I gotta tighten the bucket list. It shouldn't look like a home repair list. That's fucking tragic, right? Fix gate. That's after I go to Scandinavia. All I want to do, and I've talked about this before, and it's not even any of your business. I'm just telling you what's on my mind. I used to want to become a chef, and I was going to go to chef school, but I don't think that's a bucket list. And again, I don't know how much time I have left. I'm not dying. I'm not sick, but who knows? You know, I want to use that time efficiently. I got to break out. I got to do something. I got to go skydiving, maybe take some pilot lessons. Perhaps I should learn how to motocross. Yeah, maybe that's it. There's a lot of things I got to learn as an adult, but I don't know how much time I have left. I don't know. I just don't know. Okay. Again, there's nothing wrong. Everything is good. It's just something's going to change, man. Something, you know, one day I'm going to get on these mics and I'm going to be like, guess what? I'm a Mormon. I don't know. That's not going to be it. Guess what? I'm in the Landmark Forum and I need to tell you some things. Nope. That's not going to happen. Guess what? I'm a Buddhist. Possible, but probably not. Guess what? I'm born again Christian. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think so. Guess what? I'm a Republican. Nope. That's not going to happen. Guess what? I bought another bike that I'm not going to ride. That is very possible. Guess what? I just bought a couch for my office that was really too big for the space. That happened. Yeah. So I have that going for me. A very large couch in my office. Oh, so Lauren Lapkus and I had met one time before briefly, before I talked to her in here. And she's a very lovely, talented person. And I think we talked pretty more in depth than usual about creating characters. So that's something to look forward to. And also her podcast, which is called with special guest Lauren Lapkus. And Lauren will be at the Now Hear This Festival doing a live version of her podcast. I'll be there too with my producer, Brendan McDonald, doing a little Q&A and a little back and forth. That's October 28th through 30th in Anaheim. Go to nowhearthisfest.com for more info. And now listen to me and Lauren Lapkus.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Kiss. Have you ever done one of those like one person shows where you like do just like, it's amazing, she does 900 characters in an hour, like Anna, what's her name, Anna Deavere Smith?
I've never done that. I've only done like my, in terms of like performing on stage with my characters, I've only done like showcases and things where I would like, you know, do like 5 minutes of characters or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, this was the first time I was able to do it on like a bigger.
What, your show?
Yeah. Like the Netflix.
The characters?
Yes.
The characters.
I didn't call it that, man.
Yes, you did, man.
I mean, that's what the series is called.
Yeah. Well, who came up with that name?
I don't know. Someone at Netflix.
No, stop it. You had some control. It's your show.
No, because they're all called that. It's like the series is called The Characters, and then each one is named after each person who did an episode.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Wait, they're not all you?
No. No, it was basically Netflix had 8 alternative comedians who do a special, and they put it under one umbrella called The Characters.
So, I like how you use the term alternative comedians as if that exists.
Well, I think what it means is...
I was part of it, of the invention of it, so I'm curious to see how you interpret it.
I was going to say, I feel like maybe I'm talking about a different thing than how you might typically... But what I mean by that is just like someone who's not doing typical stand-up and like whatever. Like, I don't do stand-up, and right. So this is an opportunity for me to do what I do.
Right, right. You know. Sketch performer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but some of the people do stand-up, but it's still a little bit more like alt. I wouldn't say it's just like...
No, it's not mainstream. Yeah. Do the job, sell some drinks for the place kind of stand-up.
Totally.
I get it. It's a different job.
Yeah.
So, okay, so there's a bunch of these episodes with different alternative comedians.
Yeah.
And who are those? Who are your peers in this undertaking for Netflix?
Kate Berlant, John Early, Henry Zebrowski, Paul Downs... Doc Brown, Natasha Rothwell, Tim Robinson, and me.
I am so fucking out of the loop.
Yeah.
I know none of those people.
Well, a lot of the people are like people that you might not have heard of, which is cool, which is what's so great about it.
No, it's exciting. Yeah. You're like, hey, that guy's pretty funny. I'd like to see what he comes up with next.
Yes, you should watch John Early. I think he's like the best comedian
he's
right now.
He's the genius?
He's so fucking funny, yeah.
And he does characters?
He does, but he does stand-up and stuff too.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I'll have to look into, where does he do that stand-up? At one of the nerd outlets?
I don't even know where he is, but he does stuff in New York too. He lives in New York. And
does he like I've sort of like done this weird thing where, you know, I started out in comedy clubs, and then we did alternative venues, and now everything's an alternative venue, and I seem to be moving more back towards comedy clubs.
Yeah.
Like, I talk to a lot of sketch people, and I've been brought around by them, and I understand it's a viable and exciting and fun way. I'm actually jealous of your all of your abilities to work with other people and be pleasant and creative. I've done that.
I mean,
I did it, but late in life. But where are you from? Are you from the Midwest? Are you So you're a Chicago person?
Yes, I grew up in Evanston, if you're familiar at all.
I am familiar. That's Evanston. Yeah, I've done the, I used to do the, what was that theater right there? Main Stage.
Oh, yeah.
In Rogers Park.
Yeah.
That's right by there, right?
Oh, yeah. Rogers Park is right on the border of Evanston and Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a little area in Evanston because it's by college.
Yeah.
And there's a frozen custard place.
Yes. Custard's Last Stand.
I don't know if that's the one.
That might be different. We have Mustard's Last Stand, which is a hot dog place.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago's about meat.
Yeah, we love it.
And so you grew up there, like in, that's a nice suburb.
Yeah. I think it's like the best suburb. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I feel like it is like, it's like a liberal town and like it's very diverse and it's cool. It's not like, you know, there's a lot of like really boring suburbs right around there also. So I feel like I got the good one.
Yeah. I've grown to love Chicago. I think it's an amazing place. And I'm happy when people come from there.
Yeah, where are you from?
I grew up in New Mexico primarily.
Oh, cool.
But like I spent a lot of time in New York, and I spent time in Los Angeles and San Francisco. So Chicago was sort of like I was late to it.
Yeah.
And you get there and you're like, holy shit, this is its own place completely.
Yeah.
It's got its own style, its own sense of itself, its own kind of ethnic diversity, weird kind of like a lot of the people that came to the Midwest were from Baltic region.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true.
There's like, you know, a lot of the Ukrainian, Polish, you know, good, there's healthy.
Family's Lithuanian. So
Lithuanian?
Yeah.
You look Lithuanian.
Thank you.
Is that possible?
Know. Yes. I mean, I'm half Lithuanian. I look very Lithuanian.
Like, I mean, do they have accents, Lithuanian?
I mean, they have Lithuanian accents, but I couldn't do that for you. I wouldn't really know how.
Your parents do?
My dad speaks Lithuanian and stuff, but he's American. But
so he's first generation American?
They moved when he was a baby. So
when Ceausescu was there, you know, killing everybody and pushing people out?
No, I don't
out.
Even know, man.
Is that the guy's name? I think that was, I'd like to think it was. There was some trouble in Romania with a fairly corrupt leader of sorts that did some bad things and enabled some bad shit, but it was probably after your dad's because I remember it.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I don't know the history of Lithuania.
I don't know anything about that.
Really? So you had no interest of sort of like, where am I culturally from?
I'd like to go there. Like, I've actually thought about taking a trip with my dad and going there. But besides that, I haven't done a lot of research.
Does he go back?
He's been back a few times.
Does he still have family there?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't even know what to expect. I don't even know where is it?
I mean, first of all, I'm working on my geography. This is actually a thing that I'm trying to get better at right now, which is like learning where all the states are and all of the countries
consciously,
are.
You have to.
Well, because it's actually like so sad when you like, have you ever like, I'm sure in school, like where you have to fill in like an empty map and like fill in all the states. Yeah. And like then you realize like how little you actually know.
I think I could do it.
You could do it?
I think so. The South gets a little confusing.
Yeah.
But the middle, the left, and the right, yeah, I could do it.
All the little ones in the top? Oh, I'm bad.
How many little ones? There's not that many little ones
like,
up there.
Like Delaware and then like Vermont and like all those little...
Vermont's pretty big.
Yeah, I guess it's bigger than...
but Delaware and Rhode Island are pretty tiny. But yeah. That's it. You know, and New Hampshire and Vermont, that's tricky.
Yeah.
Virginia, West Virginia is tricky. South Dakota, North Dakota, you should be able to figure out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then it gets a little confusing around, you know, Virginia, the two Virginias, the North Carolinas.
I think the like four corners I get confused about. Like, but you probably would know those better because you're from New Mexico.
Oh, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona.
Colorado. Well, wait.
Oh, right.
Utah.
Right.
Yeah, whatever.
Man, this is fucking great.
I'm doing horrible.
No.
Whatever.
No, I understand where it's confusing, but I know New Mexico is right next to Texas.
Yeah.
And right beneath Colorado and right next to Arizona. And then Utah's up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. And then Oklahoma, a little piece of Oklahoma there. And
yeah.
That kind of comes out.
That one I know. It looks like a pot.
You got that one?
Yeah.
I'd probably be tricky with Illinois and Ohio and the other one. I guess Iowa.
Yeah.
Indiana. Maybe I'd have a hard time.
Those.
You are?
But that's just
because you
I
lived
know
around
them.
There.
Yeah.
You drove around.
Yeah.
Really? Made road trips?
Yeah. My family is in Indiana and Ohio. And you know.
I was just there. I was just in Iowa.
Oh yeah,
which is
that's
it starts
boring.
With an I.
Yeah, I don't. I've never been there actually.
And you're gonna say? Did you say it's boring?
I just that's my guess.
It's beautiful.
It's probably
it's how
boring.
You look at it. I had that realization. All right, so what? You got big family?
No, I have a brother and. Just
were you Catholic-y?
Mm-mm. No, I'm Greek Orthodox technically,
really?
But I don't subscribe to any religion.
How'd that happen?
My mom is Greek, and then that's like how she grew up, and so like that's the only church I've really gone to. But I've only
the good
only,
costumes.
Yeah, gorgeous.
The priest got good costumes. Big
nice
hat,
scented
hats.
Incense coming through.
Right, big
yeah.
hat. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the full thing.
It would all be in Greek. I didn't know. I mean, it'd be like for like funerals or like Christmas, Easter. But,
yeah,
I just didn't really. Then I fell off at a certain point.
Sure.
We stopped saying we would go. My mom got mad.
No more Easter? She goes, though, right?
No, then she said, well, she works at a Catholic school, so she goes with her school to church.
So she's got that taken care of.
Yeah.
Oh,
there's some
good.
Checking in.
yeah. She's all set.
Yeah.
But, Greek, so that's good. You grew up with good food, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really care about food. I'm like not really someone who cares about that.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you care about, Lauren? Come on, don't make it so hard.
I'm not making it hard. I don't care about baklava doesn't mean I'm like making it hard.
Baklava is pretty special if you got the taste for it. It doesn't thrill me. I saw a piece of it the other day and I didn't go like, oh, I got to.
Yeah.
It's hard to find good baklava.
Yeah.
Phyllo dough in general, like, has got to be really right on the money.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know more about it than I do, even. I feel like I'm like a plain hot dog person. Like, I don't really like...
No brats?
I like brats, but I mean, I don't put anything on my food. Like, there's a lot of foods I've never had that's, like, really...
Wait, you just eat a hot dog with nothing on it?
Yeah. Like, I've never had, like,
no
a pickle.
Roll?
I like the bun.
Whoa, back up. You've never... What?
I've never had a pickle... I've never like bitten into a peach.
What?
I didn't have a blueberry till I was like 20.
So, but that's a pathology. There's something wrong with you.
I don't know.
I mean, how do you go through life and not go have a pickle?
I was very picky when I was little and I just really didn't want to eat anything I didn't know.
So you're one of those persons that when you were a kid, you ate the same thing like every night.
Yeah. Oh, my lunch was exactly the same from kindergarten all the way through high school. I
Get
had the same
fuck
thing
out of here.
Every day.
What was it?
Peanut butter sandwich, no jelly, like the bag of chips and like a cookie or whatever and like a drink. Like I just had like the peanut butter sandwich every day for like my whole life.
And were you picky about the peanut butter?
I mean, yeah, I buy the same one forever. I mean,
what?
Like a Skippy or a Jif peanut butter.
So,
it's like straight up regular.
Creamy,
or maybe sometimes I have a chunky.
Oh, so that was the big breakout thing? Like, what am I going to do today?
Yeah, but I eat to live kind of thing, so I don't really care about that.
Do you get no joy out of eating?
I do, but I feel like I have a sensitive stomach, so it's like not as fun to just like have some crazy meal and I feel sick after. And
but
like,
you'll eat a plain hot dog.
Yeah. But indeed. I moved to Silver Lake recently and I'm like, there are more vegan restaurants and vegetarian things. So I'm like, I've been leaning that way and it's been making me feel better. I don't like do it for everything, but like if I'm ordering something out, I'll try not to get any like cheese.
Oh,
or
yeah?
Meat.
Which place you go?
I like Squirrel.
It's good.
I like Mohawk Bend.
Oh yeah, Mohawk Bend's all right. A lot of fried stuff there.
But I always I get like vegan pizza or like which I normally would think was disgusting. Yeah. But it's really good.
Do you ever go to Elf Cafe?
Yeah, I've been there. That's good.
It's kind of fancy.
Well, they're very like pretentious there. Like they kind of just act like everything is important. I don't give a shit about any of it.
Yeah, there's like three tables.
Yeah. And there's like weird shit on everything. Like there was like harissa dust on like something. Like, what is that?
Dust.
I don't know what that is.
Well, I like harissa.
What? I don't even know what it is.
It's like a Moroccan hot sauce.
Oh, well, okay. Then and there was dust on it.
Yeah, well, the dusts get a little.
Yeah.
It's like, why'd you bother? Just come on. Just give
us the
stuff.
Just the idea of it.
All right, So you're moving away from just peanut butter sandwiches.
Yeah, I haven't eaten one in a few years, actually.
I will be honest with you. I'll eat a cheeseburger plain. Like, I don't put anything on the cheeseburger.
Okay, so I'm not a freak.
No. I go out of my way. Like, I just like if it's good cheese and burger, just don't, no ketchup,
don't
nothing.
Don't fuck with it. Yeah.
Don't fuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you start doing, running away from your emotions in life with characters?
High school. I started doing improv at IO and like when I was a senior in high school. So yeah, that makes there's probably something to that. I don't know. I don't really
don't
analyze
know.
It that deeply.
You
but,
don't?
Well, and I mean, I don't know. Do you feel like you got into comedy because you were like fucked up? Is that what I feel like? Everyone always wants to say that. Like, I don't know that that's like necessarily true for everyone.
Well, I can only speak from experience. I think, like, if I wonder, I guess the real answer comes from what compelled you initially. Like, what was, you know, like if someone's a class clown or somebody's, you know, doing a thing, you know, it's usually for attention of some kind. So then you kind of pick that apart. Like, why do I need this attention? What did I not get or what do I need? And, you know, and then sort of like you can build a whole sort of, you know, inner life for yourself based on your needs and insecurities.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely needed attention. But I feel that I got a lot of that. So I also don't know why I needed so much. Like my parents were attentive to me, and
they were nice, stable people.
Yeah. So like that's the thing that I remember. Like when
they're still together.
Yeah.
Wow.
45 years or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But I remember when I was doing improv, I was with like I was like 18 and all my classmates were like 25 and
at the IO.
Yeah. And I remember hanging out with them and then they'd be like kind of talking about why they're all fucked up and why their lives are all bad, and then like they made fun of me because mine wasn't or whatever. And that was like kind of a thing where it was like I just like being funny or whatever. But I'm sure there's more to it, but like at the time especially that was just
No, you're like that would make you the rare thing. But I didn't think like I think innately, and this is just my own opinion because there's no real proof of it, but I think younger people who are involved with sketch are certainly a bit more well adjusted than comedians generally, because just by virtue of their ability to work with others.
Yeah.
Do you know what
I
mean?
That's interesting.
Like there's a collective to it.
Yeah,
like you're not so fucked up that you're like, no, I don't need nobody.
Right,
you can do
right, there is something about
don't
doing
tell
stand-up
me what to do.
Yeah,
and it's so much stand-up is like don't fuck you.
Yeah,
I'm doing it this way.
Right, and you really can't do that. It was with improv, especially.
It's against the rules.
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone hates you. There are people like that, but they suck.
It's a democracy of sorts. You're voted out by cold shoulders and backstabbing.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, there are these types within the improv community, like the sort of commedia dell'arte things. Like, there's always the fat guy that drinks too much, it seems.
Right. Yeah. There are the tropes or whatever. Yeah.
but not even onstage tropes. It seems like there's offstage tropes as well.
Definitely.
Because the heroes, I imagine the heroes of people in sketch are different. You know, they're sketch people.
Yeah.
I mean, that can go back to Second City or back to SNL or whatever. And I guess a heavy guy would be like, well, I guess I'm going to be that guy.
Chris Farley guy.
The gods just like everything's at this level.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to drink a lot.
Well, yeah, I think for those types of guys, there are like clear role models where it feels like you're allowed to do that or that it's like celebrated. So then you.
Funny fat guy. That's important.
Yeah. That's
very important to TV and movies.
We need him.
We need a funny fat guy every few years.
Yeah.
I don't know if we even have one right now.
I feel like it's oddly Josh Gad right now in like a way that like no one expected.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
But not in a open a movie kind of way.
Right, right, right.
But yeah.
He's just there, and we're like, cool.
Wow, is that true? I guess that's sort of true. When was the... Oh, Kevin James was sort
wedding,
of a...
Oh, yeah.
Kevin James was a pretty big star fat guy.
Yeah.
And he had the classic sort of not self-destructive, but kind of like can't help... uncomfortable fat guy.
Right.
Funny.
Yeah.
So, all right, so I Improv Olympic. I've talked to a lot of people from a lot of different strands of improv.
Yeah.
Not so much that one. Oh, why'd you pick that one?
Well, it was actually recommended to me by my teacher in high school, and because I basically like wouldn't get into any play at school and like really wanted to.
You auditioned?
Yeah, I auditioned for like every play and musical, and I would only get into like, we had like a variety show type thing that we did, like a sketch show essentially.
Yeah.
And I would get into that, but that was it. And
why didn't you get into plays?
I don't know. I'd love to like see my auditions. I'm sure I was really nervous.
You're a song and dance person.
I mean, to some extent, but not really. Like there are my school had really talented people also, like who were just like amazing. So,
but really talented in a very specific way that enabled them to do like musical theater in high school, but they didn't have any real creativity, so they're not doing it anymore. I bet.
Probably most.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. But there are some that are really successful. Like there's
that
one
you went to high school with.
Yeah, she's a little older than me, but Jessie Mueller is currently on Broadway. She was playing Carol King in Beautiful, and now she's starring in Waitress. Like she's like a big Broadway star.
Oh.
So there's some people like that who are genuinely
funny. But she's not funny though, right?
I think she was funny. I didn't know her personally. I knew her brother, but
was he
funny too. They're all an actor family. The parents are actors.
Really?
All the kids are actors.
That can't happen in a lot of places, but I guess it can in Chicago. You can sort of like be an actor in Chicago.
Yeah, like theater actors.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and there's opportunity for everything.
So your high school teacher,
he told me to take classes at I.O. and to not do Second City because they had a teen program, but he thought that I should do the adult program at I.O. and there was like a limit on the age at Second City. So he was like, go to I.O. and do that. So that's how I started.
He had faith in you.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, Aaron Carney.
Yeah?
Yes, that was his name. And he's still alive and he's awesome. Yeah.
Do you thank him publicly as often as possible?
I have thanked him a few times publicly, yes. Because I really owe it to him that I started doing that. I wouldn't have done it without him.
You need that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, believes in you.
He did. I don't know if he still does. Maybe he does. But
I'm sure he's just sitting there going, why'd I fucking tell her?
She sucks.
Yeah, I'm not on board. So who was there when you got there?
Like my teachers, like Peter Gwynn and Sharna and Jason Chin and Susan Messing, TJ Jagodowski,
Susan Messing,
Noah Gregoropoulos.
Yeah, like I don't know any of them. So they're
okay. Those are all like big improv people
from
like,
Chicago.
Yeah.
But not in that area, because like no one's talked about Improv Olympic that much. Yeah, Second City, yes.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot about Second City, and I've heard about Second City touring crew.
Yeah, I didn't do any of that.
Yeah. How was Improv Olympic different? What was, because I know Second City has sort of a mythology to it.
Yeah, and they're focused on like writing too, like sketch writing and things like that. Like, I didn't do any sketch classes or anything like that. I just did
straight
improv.
Up improv.
Yeah, and so it's long
like
form
Harold's?
Improv. Yeah.
They did that there. So were they an offshoot of Second City? Were they like, we're going to start our own thing?
I guess in the timeline that would be true, but it was so different from what they were doing that I think it was just like, I don't know if it was an offshoot as much as like a different thing.
Now, when you were coming up, did you know that, what was your goal?
To be on SNL.
It was, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was like what that was the only thing I knew like my whole life as like how you would do this. Like I wanted to be a comedian, but I didn't really know what that meant besides SNL. Like I really watched that all the time and admired those people. And
which ones?
Like Chris Farley and Adam Sandler. That was like
going back.
David Spade.
When you were a kid.
Yes, those are my favorite people growing up.
So funny, right?
Yeah,
he was funny. Dave, I talked to Spade.
He's so funny. I still think he's like one of the funniest people. Like,
you should listen to that interview because like he just naturally has a way. Like because he's a lot more open now, but there's still this weird little bite that he has.
He's so dry. Yeah, I love
it. He's really good.
Yeah, he's amazing. So that was like the thing, and then doing, but it still wasn't like the end goal. I think doing improv, I really just wanted to do improv. I wasn't really thinking like, and then I'll do this, and then I'll get on SNL. Like, I think now that's for people that's like a very obvious like plan.
Yeah,
it wasn't so clear before that could lead to that.
Right,
like, it was just more like a step of like performing and like how.
But did you know? Well, I guess. Well, at that time, did you know that they were involved with Second City, like Chris and those guys?
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, I definitely like read all the books and did all that shit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're full on SNL.
Yeah, I knew everything about it. Yeah.
And did you know how the audition process worked? Did you know you needed characters?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I had seen some of the auditions and stuff, and like, I knew enough. I mean, from watching the show, you kind of infer that, I guess. But like, I didn't really know about the process until I was older and like heard more from people. And
right,
because they don't talk about that much, that the audition as much, like in books and things like that. It's
right,
more just like
they don't talk about the horrible process.
Yeah,
the waiting.
Yeah,
the not knowing.
Yeah,
the horrible, dry, empty feeling of the room when you do your screen test.
Yeah.
Did you audition for it?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Don't talk about it yet. Let's build up to
okay.
it.
Okay. It's a crazy story, man.
Is it?
No, I mean, I don't know. It was crazy for me, but it's, I wouldn't build it up that way.
Well, let's wait. So, okay, yeah. So you're in high school, and then you graduate high school. You did all right?
Yeah. I just really wanted to, like, be an adult and, like, do comedy and stuff.
So no college?
I went to college. I went to DePaul in Chicago, but so I could keep doing improv.
You didn't care about college. You were just placating your parents?
Yeah, and I wanted to get a degree. Like, that was something that was important to me.
What'd you get it in?
English.
Oh, good. Smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fuck you. I know it's worthless.
I have the same degree.
Oh, you're great.
Yeah. I'm in my garage. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But that's what's so wonderful is that you're doing what you want to do. I think it's great.
Well, but like, were you involved with the English thing? Did you write some poems? Did you read, did you have a focus, like romantic literature or something? What interested you?
I didn't really focus. I didn't have like, you know.
You didn't have to do that?
No, thankfully. There was like a point actually in my senior year where I realized like, wait, am I supposed to have like a thesis? Like, but I didn't have to. So
right.
I got really worried because like some of my friends were doing that. I was like, wait a second, am I supposed to be doing that?
Because it's the last semester.
Attention. Yeah.
Did I miss something? But you read your shit?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I love reading and I love literature, and that was like a good, and I love writing. So like for me, that was like a perfect major.
So during college, you're just going over to IO and doing. At that point, is there a company or you're not doing classes, right?
No, yeah, I graduated and I got on a team, and I was on teams for like all of college, and that I'd perform almost every night at a few different theaters around town.
All improv.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how it works there.
Yeah, I mean, I would do like shows at IO, and then like the theater called The Playground, which was like an indie theater, and you could be on a team there. And so, and The Annoyance, so there, shows oh, all
so
around town.
The Annoyance, that's the other one. So yeah. there's actually a circuit, and if you're, you know, at a certain level, you can just go jump in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you get on teams, and then you can perform all the time. And then if you're not performing, you're rehearsing at that point.
But do you always perform for your team? Is it possible to just show up at one of these other places, and there's a team on stage,
oh,
and
no.
they're like, "Lauren's here, jump in."
No.
We're jamming.
No, I mean, yeah, I guess there's like jams, but that's always horrible.
It is.
It's just, not, I mean, for me, I think it's
why?
Because it's just like a mishmash of like horrible things happening. Like it's just a lot of times like people who've never done it before. Like, it just like would stress me out to be like doing.
So you get used to your team and what each person's strengths are and you kind of move as a unit.
Yeah.
Even though you're making it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if you do a jam or then it's just sort of like, who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
Well, I would like, this is not like a cool thing, but I would like go to IO and watch The Jam. There's a show called The Jam.
Uh-huh.
That's like your...
Where you kind of can wait to jump in kind of
thing? People will like get up and stuff, but I would just like get drunk and like heckle it. So, and I was like a kid, so it's super annoying.
Must have loved you.
Yeah, but it was fun.
So you do this and now throughout all of this, when do you start kind of like developing characters that stay with you?
Yeah, I think like over, I mean, for what was kind of crazy for me was that like I never used my own voice in improv until I moved to New York. I moved to New York and did like UCB, and that's where I kind of learned to like use my own speaking voice. I
really?
Would do character voices all the time.
Yeah.
And that was like a big turning point for me in terms of like really understanding how I wanted to play, and then like from that point on it became easier to have characters that I brought back essentially. But but in improv you don't really want to like repeat the same character. Like you don't want to be like, oh, here she goes with that guy. Like I do like some things that are like I'll be like a teenage boy, but it's like different every time because you're like in a different situation and it's not.
So the characters are not necessarily they don't have names and they don't and you don't know when they're going to come up because you're improvising.
Yeah.
But when one starts to sort of take shape, a voice, I guess it starts with, then at a different time you can kind of build a personality around
it. Yeah, and for me, actually, when I really did that was through Comedy Bang Bang. Like, that was how I kind of started having recurring characters.
Once you got out here?
Yeah, and, like, just having the opportunity to do a character that you can bring back, like, speak in the character voice for, like, an hour and then bring it back again, and so you have, like, a built history with it, and so...
So when did you... Okay, so you're kicking around these teams, and you're, like, were you making money doing improv?
No.
There was no money?
No, I was babysitting, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw a babysitter character. That was funny.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched that one. What was that from?
Like a video online? Yeah. It was like a web series, like Terrible Babysitters.
What happens? So you spend all that time and you get polished as an improviser. But what happens after Chicago? Where's the move?
I moved to New York. I was in a sketch duo with my friend Candy Lawrence, and she's a stand-up now. But we moved to
How's
New York
doing?
Together. She's great. She's so funny.
Is she out here?
Yeah. But we moved to New York together, and we were...
Was she in your group?
It was just us two doing sketch. So that
but
was
where'd
like,
you meet her?
We met doing improv on like an all-female team called The Misfits. That was like...
How was that? How was that different and good?
It was great. It was really great at the time, especially because it was just like a... It's a different energy to be with all women. I mean, usually I'm the only girl on a team or like one of two.
Right.
You know? So it's like when you're with a bunch of women, it's very supportive and cool. And also like it can get very catty and weird. So I think, you know, all the things you might expect.
And did you play a lot of male characters?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everyone kind of took turns doing that, which is fun. I mean, I do that in improv anyway, like with men. I don't care, but it's more obvious when you're with a bunch
of
women.
Is it fun to play men?
Yeah, I think it's great.
So you meet this girl, Candy, and you guys are writing sketches then.
Yeah.
After that, you're like, we're going to write sketches.
Yeah, but it was still very loose. We really improvised like most of, we'd have like beats to it. And then we'd
But how's that different than like a comedy team kind of? Like, isn't that
That's
something
like
you could do in a comedy club and not necessarily a...
Yeah, so we'd do a lot of shows like with stand-ups. Like we'd be like the one like not, you know, stand-up thing. And then that was like kind of how we started going around. We'd do like Lincoln Lodge and like different shows like that around town.
Right.
And then we moved to New York and kept doing that, but then I started doing UCB and got really into that. And
What do you mean? So you auditioned to be, why, or you just started working over there?
No,
or what?
You have to take the classes. Like if you've never done,
you went through classes again.
Yeah.
Who were your teachers?
Porter Mason and Kevin Hines. Just rotated.
And how many years did you do that for?
That's just 1 year. I mean, it really wasn't that long. It was like probably 6 months or something.
Yeah. And then why'd you come to L.A.? Why'd you decide to bail on New York? Why didn't you just become a fixture?
Well, I always wanted to move to L.A. My plan was to move to New York for a year. And so I did that. I just wanted to go there because Candy wanted to go. And so it was like, okay, well, I'll go for a year and then I'll move to L.A. And
Did you move out together again?
No, I moved alone. I was in a long distance relationship and then moved.
What happened to that?
We got married. Yeah. and then we got divorced. So yeah, that's all that's happened.
How long did that last?
We were together for 8.5 years, but
that's about it.
We got yeah.
I've had a couple, about 7.5, 8 years, where you're with them for a while, and then I get married for like three and a half years, and then got divorced.
Yeah, you did that twice.
Twice, yeah.
So I you knew got another you were divorced one. Once.
No, I did the almost the exact same thing twice.
That's so interesting.
In the timeline.
Yeah, not the same type of relationship, but the same.
No,
time.
No, I felt differently, but the timeline sort of was similar, which
That's
is kind of
so
odd. Like when you got married, so you'd been with him for like 5 years.
7 years. We were married for a year and a half.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So like, was that when you got married, was it one of those things where it was like, yeah, I guess we should.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's still happening now. So it's like a weird, I didn't mean to walk into that. I did that, but.
You're in the middle of a divorce.
Yeah.
Yes. Has it gotten ugly yet?
No, it's actually, I think it's about as good as it can go.
Right.
In terms of those things. Like I've heard so many horror stories from people that like, yeah.
Are you mediating?
No, it's all handled and everything. It's just a matter of like time now.
Oh, so there
like
was
official.
Oh, okay. So there wasn't lawyers involved.
No, we did it ourselves.
Well, then it's not only is it amazing.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Yes, I think so. I think we both felt that way. So that's good.
You both wanted out.
I think we both felt it was the best that could happen. I don't know. It's still a very confusing thing. I think.
Okay.
But, you know. Well, I'm still working through my feelings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna go on a while.
Cool.
And now you're a divorced person.
I know, it's so weird. I didn't want to be that.
Welcome to the club, divorced person.
It's such a weird
person.
Thing, but it's also like, whatever, who cares? I don't know, there's like some part of like, I think when you think about that before that happens to you, you're like, I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
I want to be the person who's married forever or whatever I am forever. I just don't want to be that. And then you're just like, well, actually, I am that now, and I don't. It's not that big of a deal. And
I've always been a, I hope this works person.
Yeah, I think that's nice.
With... Yeah, maybe it'll
it's
work
more
out.
More realistic.
Ugh, it's fucking horrendous.
You think that's bad to have that mentality? I don't know. I think that's like better in a
no,
sense.
No, it's just
like,
the whole thing. Relationships are so difficult. I mean, like, what do you want?
Yeah, it's crazy.
How old are you?
I'm 30.
All right, so, you know, you got fresh slate.
Yeah, man.
You can still do the babies. You can do whatever
you
want. Yeah,
I know. So it's not horrible in terms of, like, life plan.
No,
like,
it's just a disappointing chapter.
Yeah, it's shitty.
Too bad that didn't work
out.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
We tried.
Yeah, man.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. You want babies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you offering?
Yeah, sure. If you take care of him.
Okay, great. That's not a good idea. That's horrible.
Yeah, I'm at this age now. It's sort of like, I guess I could have one, but you know, I don't know how active I'll be. Bring them back around.
Would you want, do you think you're going to have kids in your life?
No, I think that ship has sailed. I almost did a while back. And
are
you
glad it didn't happen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not so. I guess it's the age, but you know, I didn't have them probably for a reason. I never really thought about it. It was never a goal.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I was too selfish, too anxious, you know, too self-involved. You know, I didn't really necessarily trust myself emotionally for that shit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that I didn't. It would have probably been a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when people choose not to have kids and they purposely know they're not going to. Like, I think that's cool.
It's okay. I don't know that I think I would have been willing. It was very close.
Yeah.
But still, like, I don't, again, like, it, like, you really got to want them. And I know everyone thinks that it's just a natural thing that you want them.
Right.
But, like, I don't think I ever really had that. Like, my brother had that. And he's got three.
Right.
So, like, it was never like, we got to get, the, like, because people time their lives around it.
Yeah, and I really want kids. Like, that's something I've thought about my whole life, that I want kids. I've always known I would have kids.
I think you're gonna.
Yeah, man, I think I will, too.
I think, like, within the next 3 years, I bet.
Hey, look at this. Are you a psychic?
I'm not a psychic, but I have an understanding of the biology of the situation. I'm thinking in the next 5 years, one way or the other, you're going to have a kid.
Yeah, that is true. And that's what's cool is that, like, nowadays you can do it I could do it in so many different ways that it's amazing.
You might be doing it now. Surprise.
Whoa, shit.
That pillow is one of those pillows.
No.
Yes.
One of those pillows. Uh-huh. I don't like it. But even just, like, being like, oh, I could have, like, IVF, or I could adopt, or I could meet someone. All these different ways that it can go that you can...
Yeah,
you
know, there's a million ways it can go without having another person involved between you
great.
And your kid.
It's true.
So
it's kind of nice.
So you moved out here.
Yeah.
Wait, when did the SNL audition happen?
That happened, I want to say, 2012.
Before you left New York?
No. I was out here. I've been out here for a couple of years.
So you come out here and you start doing what? You got an agent?
Yeah, I got an agent and a manager, and then I got on a TV show, like, kind of early on into my
Orange
time
is the New
here.
Black?
No, it was called Are You There, Chelsea? It was Chelsea Handler's.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
On NBC, yeah.
That was I like her. I have a lot of respect for her. She's a tough cookie.
Yeah, it was a great experience. It was so exciting because I like loved sitcoms growing up, and like that was...
And that was a straight up sitcom, wasn't it?
Yeah, multicam.
Like old school.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're on a soundstage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've done a few of those since. And like it's the kind of show that like I really enjoy acting in it, but I don't watch multicam. So it's interesting because I'm like, I love being... It's the best way to perform, in my opinion. Like it's so fun because you have the audience and the thing and whatever.
And you have jokes... Jokes.
Yeah, I think it's fun. But I
imagine it's fun, but isn't it a little stifling of your creativity?
Well, yeah. So that's like the goal now is to like do things.
And as an actor, you're just sort of like, here's the shit that's going to come out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know if I can say this. And they're like, we think you can.
Yeah.
Why don't you just do a take for us?
Yeah.
And then you can say it how you want to say it.
Right. I mean, it's so specific and like meticulous in the way that, I mean, most multicams are done.
That's why you like it.
When I started,
it's the peanut butter sandwich.
It totally is, I think. When I started, because it was my first job, it was like kind of an easy transition out of theater performance, you know,
being on stage and having the relationship with the audience.
Yeah, and then to go on camera, it like was a very easy thing. And my character's pretty big. And so like I've learned over the years of like how to like, you know, hone that a little more, like be more like toned down, but like for like a multicam, that's great. It was perfect. It was easy for me.
They need broad characters.
Yeah. I'm like a dumb idiot who's like saying a crazy thing. Like that was like,
That they need it. It's absolutely necessary for the ridiculousness of the narrative.
Yeah.
Hey, look who's at the door.
Right.
What?
Totally. Someone's always at the door.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like I never fully noticed it as like it. It's not so much that I didn't know it.
Yeah.
But like I was watching Undateable once, and it was, and they sort of deconstruct the thing.
Yeah,
I don't even
know. That's kind of why I even said that not all of them are like that because that show is kind of different. Though.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like I don't know how much is it on purpose or just you know really a testament to how stupid viewers are. But Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But they can literally go from two people and then just sort of move the camera and like, oh, look, they're in the middle of a conversation. Right. And they're coming in the middle of a conversation. And you're like, this is fucking vaudeville.
Yeah. It's, and that's just what it is, though.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And the only thing that makes them work, one work better than the other, is if you're not thinking about that.
Right.
Like the ensemble is so strong.
Yes.
And the characters may be broad, but they have enough depth to where you can get emotionally attached and not going like, that person didn't just really drive his car into the house.
Right. Totally. Which what did is happen going on outside? Full House.
It did?
Yeah.
Someone drove the car into that? Was that a jump the shark moment?
Did that show ever jump the shark? It was great till the end.
It was? You loved
I love Full House. Yeah.
Was that the Bob Saget one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I see him around. I saw him last week.
He's cool.
Yeah, everybody's getting old. It's an interesting thing to witness. He's a little older than me.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, because he still goes up on stage and he has to identify with that.
Right. It must be so weird. Like, I think about, actually, those guys a lot because there were a few stand-ups on that show, and like to be doing something that's a family program, I mean, it's like actually so not your humor no matter what kind of adult
filthy.
You are. Right, but even like just as an adult, you're like, I don't want to say that or care about this fake kid or whatever. Like they did that for like 10 years.
That was a funny thing about him is that like I don't think I ever watched an episode of Full House. I don't know how, I miss almost everything. So it's not personal to you. Like I literally do not, I miss just about everything. And I don't know what I was doing as a child, but I was not watching comedies.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched SNL and stuff, but I missed all of it.
Yeah.
I've seen maybe three Seinfelds.
That's insane.
I don't know how.
But I've seen like, I'm the opposite. I've seen like every show over and over again. Like I've seen like every TV show my whole life. I watched them all.
That's because they're comforting to you.
Yeah. It is like my drugs.
It is. A woman that I dated could watch Friends and Gilmore Girls all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Feels great. Friends is on all the time now on TBS, and it's like, feels great.
It does feel good to you?
At any point. Yeah, and every episode's good.
And you've watched them over and over again.
Yeah.
What other ones?
Like, I mean, I watched Saved by the Bell, like 90210, like all these types of shows growing up. I loved like Teenagers when I was younger. Like, just being like, they're so cool. And then, I mean, I watch Sex and the City over and over. That's like one I've watched as an adult that I could pick up at any episode and enjoy.
The great thing about being me is that like I can like in almost every show is new to me.
Yeah.
I had the weirdest experience with The King of Queens. I never watched that show.
Oh, yeah.
I know,
I've seen a bunch of it on
But I know accident. Kevin.
Yeah.
And then I tune in and I'm like, these are pretty funny. And like Seinfeld will come on. I'm like, wow, this is a pretty good show. Yeah. And this is like a week ago.
Everyone's like, we know. That's like all we've been talking about forever.
For 2 decades.
Yeah. Leah Remini is very funny on that show. How do you say her last name?
Which one?
Remini.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's so funny on that show.
Yeah, it's a silly show, but like I'm a big fan of his because like he's just one of those big guys that like he can't like he has to be funny in every second, and and it's just from his discomfort.
Yeah,
like as soon as he's on stage, it's sort of like he just him standing there. It's funny, and I always envy people like that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, do you know those people? You must see it in sketch or in improv all the time.
I think like I don't know if you know Betsy Sodaro. She's an improviser, but she's like that where like she can kind of just walk out and people already think she's hilarious. She just
I don't know where that
anything.
Comes from.
Yeah,
it's a gift.
Just like she's just naturally emanating that she's funny.
So you come out here, you do the. So you jump right in. You're fortunate and talented.
Yeah, it was good. I was like coming out to look for an apartment and the auditions timed up and I auditioned and got on a team. So I like went back to Chicago and got all my shit and then came back and was like on a team, which was so great. Like
on a TV show, you mean?
On the team at UCB. But like, and then like getting on the show. But like having the community right away is so what's so great about improv.
And who are you people then?
All a team that you wouldn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's called Bang Rang. I'm still
was
performing with
Seth
him.
Running the place then?
No, it was this guy, Neil Campbell, who you might know.
Oh, yeah, Neil, and then Seth ran it after him, right? And
Seth,
then
I want to say, was before Neil because I never knew Seth.
Oh, maybe
Seth
that's
was
right.
The
and then Curtis Gwynn, right?
He was before him.
Oh, okay.
So Neil is Neil, and then I think Mike still.
At the old
one. No, there was someone in between who I can't think of.
At the one on Franklin.
Yeah. But.
Did I ever see you there? Did I meet you there?
No,
we
never met.
One night?
We never met until.
At the Jeff Ulrich's Jeff Tweedy weird sort of situation where like I was so happy it was a charity event, not just some weird vanity thing.
Right, right.
Going into it, I'm like, who the fuck just pays Jeff Tweedy
to
play in their living room? And then it's like, oh, it's for
It's for charity. Yeah, it was great.
And I was so relieved it wasn't a spectacular house. Like I didn't know what I was gonna walk into.
Oh, right, right. You're not like some mansion where.
Yeah, because I know Jeff. He's been great, a great friend, and we do business together. But I don't know his life.
Yeah.
And then I get this invite to a Jeff Tweedy thing, and I'm like, holy shit! And I thought we were going to walk in. There's going to be an infinity pool outside. But it was just a regular house.
No, yeah, he's so cool.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, that was super fun.
But I didn't know what to make of you.
Yeah.
You were just this, the personality I projected onto you, which I do immediately with all people, is like, oh, she's already scared of me. It's not going to be a good situation. I've overwhelmed her. Did you really think that? She's a fragile, sprite-like talent.
Did you really think this?
Well, yeah.
That's so interesting. I felt happy to meet you because I was like, oh, cool. We'll have talked for like 2 seconds before I do the thing.
Right.
It was like, but I wasn't like scared of you.
Yeah. No. I made it all up. I decided she comes from a different type of human strand.
I think what's interesting about that party specifically was that I didn't know anyone besides Scott Aukerman. And then I met a dude who I talked to like the whole night. But that was it. I didn't like know anyone. So for me, maybe if you got the energy of like a nervous person, it's more just like, I'm like, oh, I don't know anyone.
Well, yeah. And I know Scott and that's always awkward, even if you've known him for over a decade. I can always count on Scott for being initially awkward, and then eventually he starts talking like a person.
Well, it's so funny with him because I feel like I basically only talk to him on the show, like doing characters and shit. So I'm going on tour with them, him and Paul and Neil, and so I'll be getting to know them all.
Neil who?
Campbell.
He's a Bang Bang guy?
Yeah, he's opening for us, so I don't know if he's doing characters or what he's doing, but...
All right, so you're... Okay, so now you're at UCB, you got a team, you got a community, you're in LA, you're with people, you're hanging out backstage, you're having a beer.
Yeah. And yeah, I had a beer. It was great. And then I got on that show, which was great. That was
Chelsea.
And then I could stop babysitting. That was like huge for me to stop babysitting. I had a couple commercials. Right before that, I did like 4 commercials. And that kind of, I did like a Snickers commercial with Joe Pesci that was like kind of popular.
Really?
And then like, so these commercials were like running a lot. And that
How
was
it working
helpful.
With Pesci?
It was interesting. He was basically like directing the commercial, even though he wasn't the director.
Right.
And like he was wearing platform shoes.
Uh-huh. He's a little guy. Yeah. What do you want from him?
No, man, nothing. That's exactly what I wanted.
And was he nice?
He was like fine. Like we didn't like talk, you know.
It
was
didn't hang out.
No, we
I
didn't
can't
like
see
chill
it.
At Crafty together.
I can't see it. That would be two totally different forms of human.
There would just be no way to talk. I don't think it'd be possible. So that didn't happen. But that was cool because like the commercials allowed me to like quit babysitting, and then I got the show, and that helped. And then the SNL audition came while I was on hold, waiting to hear if we'd get a second season of Chelsea.
Didn't happen.
Right, but I didn't know that, so I was like auditioning in that window.
So how did the SNL audition happen?
I did a showcase at UCB, and there were like, it was 4 people like who were scouting or whatever.
Right.
And then they flew me to New York to do another showcase that Lauren would be at. It was at the Pitt Theater in New York. And so
I know
he,
that. Really? That place? Wow.
Yeah. And then they flew me again, and I did it on the stage at 30 Rock or whatever. So it was
so
like,
the Pitt Theater is weird. It's like a big stage, and there's like seating around it, but it always felt a little dirty and beat up in there.
Actually, this was a newer space.
Oh, okay.
They had an old space. This was different. But it was very, like, the audience went up very high.
Right,
it felt
right,
like.
Right.
And I could see him. I like looked through like a peephole in the curtain or whatever, and I could see him in the audience.
Yeah.
And that was crazy because I was so excited that he was actually there. Like, you just kind of thought, like, is he really even going to come
right,
to this?
Right, that seems
like,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
So what characters did you do?
They were all things that I haven't really done since. It was like, I did like, well, actually, one of them is in my special. So one of them has lasted the whole time, and you can see it. It's a stripper who strips to the saddest song ever. And so, and then I stripped to Fast Car by Tracy Chapman, and then I would hump an audience member during the chorus with dead eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so in the special, it's Brick by Ben Folds 5 because we couldn't get Fast Car. So.
Right, right. Ben Folds was a little cheaper.
Yeah, I guess. Well, Tracy Chapman apparently doesn't let her songs be used for anything. So it was like not even about money. It was more just like she just says no.
Right.
And then he, I guess, thought it was cool. I don't know if he has any idea what it is. People have been tweeting at both of us about it, and I'm like very curious if he has seen it because it's such a weird way to use his song. So
yeah.
I'm like excited to hoping that he's seen it. Yeah, so that was really fun. And then I did like a couple other things. I mean, they all kind of blur together at this point. Like I think I had like a woman who like couldn't stop crying. She was like talking to a guy that she was like trying to hit on, but she kept crying. And then like a woman who was like looking for her date, but everyone was not her date. Like, so she just got embarrassed over and over and kept trying to like play it off.
Sounds hilarious.
Yeah, it was fun. So then they
were you getting laughed?
Yeah, and it was great because we had a what was so awesome about that one with Lauren being there was that there was a full audience. So it was like you actually got real laughs and like it wasn't just like, you know, we could show him that it is funny, whether, you know.
Right.
And then
I can't believe you didn't get it.
Well, and then I went and did it again and basically had to do a couple different things. I had to do some impressions, which I don't really do, but I kind of
which
you know,
ones
I did
did
Maggie
you
Smith and
oh, yeah.
I did one of the psychologists from Hoarders, you know, it's kind of random. But and then I did a couple of the bits that I'd done before again. And yeah, I mean, it was so exciting. I mean, I was so happy to be able
was
to.
Was it hard in the studio?
I didn't think I did as great as I could have done. I think I was really nervous.
And then did you meet Lauren?
No.
You didn't even get to meet him?
No.
What the fuck happened? What happened, Lauren?
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't, I felt like fine about it. You know, I didn't like leave being like, I suck. But I just was like, I don't know. And it was such a weird time for me because I was kind of, I had done a sitcom and I was hoping we'd get a second season, but it didn't seem like it was going to happen. But because of the hold, like, I had to wait till that anyway, and they like I'm not saying the hold is why I didn't get it. I didn't get it because like they didn't want me to have it. But like at the same time, it was like there was this weird thing where it was like, but I might still get this other thing, which would be like way better for me actually in terms of like money and
yeah,
like, I don't know,
right.
Life. Whatever.
Oh, better than SNL. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean like sitcoms pay way
sure.
more than SNL. It's just
and,
it's,
and you can live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and like keep my life going how I kind of thought it was going to go. Like I wanted SNL my whole life, so like I think my ego would really want to get it. You know?
Yeah, so you could quit after a season even.
Sure, do whatever you want. But it's like the idea of getting it is more important after you've wanted it your whole life than like doing it. Like I feel, or for me, that's what I was kind of, I had to realize because I was letting go of like a dream that I always had. And so it was really hard to kind of go like, to actually ask myself, do I even want it? If they gave it to me, would I really want to do it? Of course I would do it, but would I really want to? It's so weird, like, what I saw was like, oh, well, like when you do SNL, then you like leave SNL and you like do a sitcom. But like I did a sitcom.
Movie or whatever. Right.
You know what I mean? But it's like I got to do that thing.
That's an interesting thing, though. That's a very mature thing to sort of acknowledge that you spend your whole life moving towards this thing. And then, like for different reasons, because you had some experience, you realize like, well, maybe it's not the ultimately
right.
the best thing.
Well, you know, I hear about people, first of all, like I still have the dream of like hosting it. Like I'd still love to like do something there.
Sure.
Like that would be amazing. But when you hear people talk about it and all the things I've read, all the books I knew, like I knew it was like, it's one of the hardest, most stressful jobs ever. You like don't sleep. You're up all night doing these sketches.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's like it sounds like something that would break me in
right.
so many ways. Like it's like I don't know that that's actually. I had gotten kind of accustomed to my little like multicam lifestyle of like.
And it's broken people before.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's that's scary to think of like kind of going after this dream, and then having it not be what you want it to be too.
Sure,
like,
there's probably a 70% or 80%. Chance that you saved your talent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's you never know what it is.
Because you could, like, the heartbreak possible.
Oh, yeah.
Of being, you know, benched.
Oh,
and
God.
Not be, you know.
And that's so sad. Like, I mean, I've seen so many people that I think are incredible get that show and not get the opportunity to do a bunch of characters that you know they can do and that they're so funny. And it's just so crazy to watch that happen to someone, or for someone who I know to be like an amazing talent to be let go so soon after being on. You're just like, that doesn't make any sense. That person's funnier than any of these people. Like, not like I don't know them, but I'm saying like that is a great person, and
yeah.
like they don't even get the opportunity. And you get like you have to jump through so many hoops to get it. That like you have proven yourself. Everyone has proven themselves to be very funny by getting on the show,
right?
But then like. They don't let you show it or something? Like,
no,
I don't,
yeah, it's like, yeah, it's a mystery, and I've talked to Lauren about it. You know, it's just like the decisions are not based on, you know, what you would think they would necessarily be based on.
Right.
And it doesn't, you know, it really comes down to some choices by a few people.
Right.
For the benefit of what they think is whatever, you know what I mean? It's just the nature of show business. So, okay, so yeah. You come back after that, and you're... No second season at Chelsea. Start doing Bang Bang at the beginning?
I started doing Bang Bang like 3 years ago or so.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't that long ago.
Right.
It was like a year after that.
And how did that come to happen?
Scott, I perform in ASCAD at UCB, yeah. and he came and did monologues there, and then he asked me to be on the podcast or whatever. And
that's where you really kind of took off, right?
Yeah, but I didn't know anything about it at the time, and I didn't really know like what I was supposed to do, so it kind of was lucky that it worked. But
the freedom of audio enables yeah. you to maintain an illusion a lot longer than you would on stage.
Yeah, and yeah, you can live in a character a lot longer. I mean, because what's so fun about it is that you can like create the way your physical, like the character's physicality is, and you don't have to do any of it. You can just talk about how what you look like and what you're doing,
and it's fun.
And then you
made your podcast.
Yeah, and so that was like.
The device of that's pretty clever.
Yeah, the premise or whatever, yeah. whatever you call it, is like the guest is the host and I'm the guest in character. So whoever I have come on the show will decide what the show is. They don't tell me anything in advance.
What determines the character that you do?
They decide it. So they make up what my character's going to be, and they don't tell me until we start recording. And uh-huh. they just kind of like give me a name and label me and whatever. Uh-huh. And we just talk for like an hour.
And you've done, it seems like I see your name associated with PFT a lot.
Yeah, we do a lot of stuff together. I mean, like through Comedy Bang Bang and my podcast uh-huh. and stuff. We do a lot of podcasts.
Is he a great improviser?
He is. He's so fun. I think he's like so awesome. And he's somebody who I like had seen on TV. Like I remember seeing like a special of his like a million years ago. Like
the one where he talks about drinking?
I don't remember right. what it was. But right. I remember because I watched like all the Comedy Special or Comedy Central
Jesus,
specials.
You just watch television.
Oh, nonstop. So I'd seen like every special and like I remember him, and then like meeting him was so cool, and then like he's so funny and nice and warm.
How did Orange is the New Black happen?
That was just came through like a regular audition. I like self-taped at home and sent it. They were casting in New York, and I got an audition to audition.
Like, what'd you do, like 2 seasons?
I did 2 seasons, yeah, to be like a correctional officer, which I thought would like never happen. Like I was just like,
was that the first relatively serious acting thing you did?
Yeah, I think so. And it was so interesting because there were no like Netflix shows at the time, so like I thought it was like a web
joke.
Series like, what is this like but cool, like I want to work, so whatever, I'll go do whatever. And then you find out that it's like so awesome. But even just like the kind of figuring out the tone of it as I was shooting it was interesting, because it's not, you know, I think I'm sure you know, like every year they kind of waffled between like putting themselves in the drama or comedy category,
right,
award shows or right, so it's like it really is like one of those shows where you don't know what it, and like my character, like I'd be doing something that I thought was like very serious, and then they'd be like, that was so funny, and be like, well, then I just don't know anything, like I don't yeah. know what's going on. But it was
well,
really
you know
fun.
You commit,
yeah, committed. And I think me just trying to be a correctional officer is funny because it's like,
sure, it's against type,
no fucking yeah,
right
I'm not tough,
yeah,
at all. But well, yeah,
and this the Jurassic Park role that everybody talks about is this monumental thing,
yeah. I mean,
Jurassic World, right?
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, to be able to be in that was like amazing.
Right, but the fact that you were improvising with Jake, right?
Yeah, yeah. And like
it made the cut.
Yeah, yeah. That was like, it was kind of, we shot it both ways.
Because you were sort of in the movie for comic relief, right?
Yeah, we're kind of those people like hold on to your butts people or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, and his character even is more of the comic relief even than mine, but by the end, like we were supposed to kiss in the script, like that was the whole thing, and mm-hmm. then Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt's characters kissed, kind of like that was like improvised as well, like their kiss, so like that kind of made our kiss not funny anymore, like right. it was supposed to be like kind of funny that these two losers would kiss at the end, and then it's like, well, that's not really that good. So then we shot it that way, and then we shot it, which I still thought was good, like I still thought it'd be cool if like, because you never see the underdog characters get mm-hmm. that moment, like the kind of hero moment. But then we shot it with like kind of the improv of me turning him down, and that was really fun. Obviously, way funnier, so way better.
And who directed that?
Colin Trevorrow.
So like it seems like a rare thing that you improvise as much as you did on that budget of a movie.
Oh my god! Yeah,
and then have it happen. It's yeah. pretty astounding.
Well, he's so cool because he kind of has like an indie background. Like he had done like a few indie movies before this, so this was a big thing for him. But he let us play like it was an indie. Like, it was just, like, with everything. Like, we improvised, like, small talk before, like, every scene that you see that didn't make it in. That is just, like, who allows you to do that when
right.
you're shooting this huge movie where the important thing is, like, all of the dinosaurs and, like, Bryce coming in and being freaked out or whatever.
Right.
Like, that's
right.
obviously more
right.
important.
Right.
But, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so that was
you
really
lucked
cool.
out.
Yeah, it was so
and people
amazing.
Remember that.
Yeah, well, because that boyfriend, like I have a boyfriend, like that was like, it was a big enough moment that people remember it. So it's cool.
Yeah. Good for you.
Thanks.
Now I'm so proud of you.
Oh, now you like me. That's good.
I didn't never not like you. And we're both on Animals.
Yes.
On HBO, which people seem to like.
I love doing that show. Did you have fun doing
that? Yeah, I didn't know what it was because, you know, Duplass, Mark called me. He's like, yeah, you go do this thing? And I'm like, okay. So I get a house.
Yeah, right. Same.
Yeah, so you just go to this house where it looked like four guys are living there.
Yes.
And you record this thing. It's like, is this really a thing?
Like in someone's bedroom. It was so weird. Well, and those two guys, Mike and Phil, I didn't even know it was a Duplass thing until like later. I just got like, for me, it was like, oh, you can like do this voiceover thing. I'm like, cool, like free voiceover work. Like I like always like to do that. So then the fact that it like turned into like something so cool, and they're just so talented. Like the way that they animated is so awesome. Like,
yeah, it looks cool.
Getting to improvise with them is great. And rare.
And okay, so what people can see, well, I think we talked about everything that people can see you in.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be on a new show on HBO called Crashing. That's Pete Holmes' show.
Oh, where he sleeps at different comics houses?
Yeah, I play his wife who leaves him. And
for the minister?
No, it's for like a hippie dude.
Oh, not the real story.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a minister. I knew it was based on his real life, but I didn't know she left him for a minister.
I think so. I think they were
both in
the church.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And have you shot that already?
We shot the pilot, and then I'm doing a few more episodes. It's so fun. Judd Apatow directed it, and that was like a dream of mine to work with him. So
he's a nice guy.
Cool.
He lets you do what you do.
Well, you know, I think he was so cool is that he's somebody who's so interested in comedy. Like, no matter, he's had all this amazing success and stuff, but he still wants to know about all the other stuff. He listened to my podcast. I'm like, the fact that you would listen to that like blows my mind. Like, I just was like, I thought that was so nice.
Yeah, like, no, he's a producer.
Yeah.
So he certainly wants to be on the pulse.
But like, it just feels like so many people can get away with not doing that. Uh-huh. Like that it's like, oh, he just seems like a real comedy fan. Like he wants to know.
He makes big movies.
But I know it might sound so obvious, but like, I just feel like that's not true of so many people.
I think your assumption is that these people live in a different world and they're not as accessible as he is.
Yes.
And like, where does he get the time?
Like, yeah, like he's going to want to listen to my dumb thing. Like, that's so cool. Like, that's a nice person.
He's not doing stand-up again. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You're like, shouldn't you be running the entire comedy industry in Hollywood?
Right. I got to see him at Carnegie Hall when we were shooting the pilot, and he was so great. And like, what I thought was so awesome is that he incorporates so much of his real life into the stand-up, like talking about being famous and stuff like that. I think people don't really touch on that. Like, once you're a comedian, you've gotten famous,
right?
You don't mention that,
right?
Like, but it is a weird,
well, like,
interesting
he used
part
to be a stand-up, and then he sort of stopped before he got very good or big at it. And now he's like started back up again.
Yeah.
And he's just, it is kind of interesting that he's just talking. He has to.
Right.
Because no one knows him as that.
Yeah.
I mean, because if he's not, like, he's really got to show his chops as a stand up because people are like, Judd Apatow's not a stand up.
Right.
He makes movies.
Right. Because they don't know the history.
Right.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy that, you know, that things are working out for you and
Thank you. You've
branched out from peanut butter sandwiches and that. Your divorce wasn't so awful and that you're going to go on tour and that you're doing funny things. You seem like a decent person.
Thanks. I'll say the same about you. You seem cool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we did all right?
Yeah, I like you.
Oh, thank God. That's all this was about.
Yeah. There was a note in my email to like judge you at the end. So, yeah.
Oh, really? Be sure not to let him off too easy. Well, the other question I was wondering, like, when you do improvise, what have you ever been sort of like? Because when you think of the stripper with the dead eyes dancing to sad songs, I mean that whole conceit is very funny and painful and weird and rides a line. But like the difference between doing a character that is supposedly has an emotional depth, like, you know, like the difference between these people that would do character-driven shows. That were heavy versus comedic. Have you ever been sort of, you know, challenged to, you know, explore the depth of these, you know, sort of comedic characters?
Well, I do think that like most of my characters are really sad inside and like, that's their wounded people.
Right.
That's what I'm like attracted to.
Right.
And I think what's so great about.
But is the backstory impulsive or do you know it?
Oh, what do you mean?
Like of a character. Like, do you have a sense like an actor would have a certain type of actor, like where they come from? What?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't really think, I don't like consciously think about that.
Right.
But when you're doing a character really intensely and specifically, you know everything they would say to anything that comes at them. So that's kind of what that is to me. Like just the automatic what this person would say to that is like tells that story of where they came
but
from.
But like if I were to ask like that pizza lady, like, you know, the character that likes pizza.
Oh, yeah. Big Sue. Yeah.
Big Sue. Like if I were to ask her, like, what was her relationship with her father like?
It's not good. I haven't talked to him in a long time. It's not good. I do not know his name. I call him Daddy, but he does not respond. It's like you just like you just know,
right?
So just, it's
instinctual.
Yeah,
and you sort of yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I've done some improvising, and you know, you have to draw from your own experience with people and the tone of that personality because you kind of know them, right?
Right. Well, I think with improv, like when you walk on stage with a scene partner, you're getting everything from the way they look at you. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a little bit of like a hippy dippy thing when you say it out loud, but like, I don't need you to explain everything. I go like, oh, he's thinking something kind of sad or he's like this or that. And so you kind of like immediately make judgments about the person so that you can move the scene along.
Right.
So I think when you're doing character work, it's like you have to just decide those things immediately or like you're wasting everyone's time.
Right.
You just have to know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that just comes from experience.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been doing improv so long now that it's like it is experience. Like,
right.
When you're starting, like I think my characters were very shallow when I was starting.
Right.
But it's just because I'm like, I'm just trying to say something. Like, I'm just trying to talk and,
right, and be
nervous.
Funny.
Nervous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but at a certain point, you get past that.
Yeah, because the ones I've seen, the three or four, you know, they immediately sort of, you know, have a depth and you identify their sadness immediately.
Yeah.
Do you know Daniel Klaus? Do you know the cartoonist?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Yeah, you might, Ghost World was based on his comics.
Oh, cool.
I interviewed him about the characters. And he said that how he usually finds these characters is that he'll look at people and he'll see somebody's face. And if it's interesting to him, like, what could that face? What is the life of that face?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what you feel in that moment when you just, you know, you kind of lock into somebody on the street.
Yeah.
That seems to have something.
Yeah.
Usually a sadness or whatever. And he would just base these characters on that first sort of taking in of somebody.
Yeah, that's like, so interesting.
Yeah, and now I'm like looking at people's faces and the ones that really are heavy or like, you know, seem to have like, it's like, how does that fit in the world?
Yeah.
And then that's where he goes with the story. And I have to, you know, whatever feelings he gets from that person's being in that, like maybe even a 5-second interaction.
Yeah, that's
and I
cool.
imagine improv's like that.
Yeah, and I think I get inspired by people that I see. Like a lot of the things you'll see in my special or whatever are like based on real people that I've met or seen.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like it's fun to, I mean, like I just am really excited when I see someone who's like weird and I want
to. Are you like, do you like
them.
Molly Shannon?
Yeah. Oh, she's great.
Like she's really good at that.
Yeah. She's has such a, like, nuance to her face, like she's and her eyes like tell a story, like,
and she's very sensitive to sadness.
Yeah. Oh, know? Yeah. You can just see like the pain, like she like the empathy. And,
yeah. Who else do you like?
Amy Sedaris is like my favorite person.
Oof, wow.
And, yeah.
And she's so good, right?
She's amazing.
She's like something from another realm.
Well, and she, like, I am fascinated by their family. Like, I read a lot of David Sedaris stuff, and, like, I love when he talks about her or his other siblings.
Yeah, he's been in here.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wait, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. That's cool. I'll listen to that.
He was very nice to me.
Yeah.
And he's very interesting. Yeah, he's, he's a very funny guy.
Oh, my God. I love him. I'll download that. I'm going on a trip. That'll be
good. Have Scott set you up with the Howl FM.
Oh,
thing.
Look, I have that. I have to publicize it all the time on my podcast.
Oh, you do? Well, yeah, the Sedaris
one's
on
Howl,
there. Yeah.
That's great.
And Molly is too. Did you listen to Molly?
Yes, I did listen to that one.
Oh, that
I love
story
that.
Is so sad.
I know her life. Oh my gosh. I was blown away by that one. And Jenny Slate's, I also really loved her episode. Her SNL story. I like cried.
It was heartbreaking. Me too.
Yeah,
it was
good.
It was, and then I talked to Michaela Watkins.
Yeah.
Who, like, Jenny, like, that was who replaced her.
Oh, right.
So there were these two.
Wow, so for her, that's a totally different experience.
Exactly.
She, like, got the opportunity out of nowhere, probably, because it was kind of mid-season.
Well, you're right. Well, yeah. You know, Michaela said there's that feeling where you know who your boyfriend's dating now, kind of.
Right. Like, yeah, that's shitty. That must feel weird.
It was pretty intense.
That's cool.
So you don't have to deal with any of that, because you didn't get it.
Cool.
Yeah. See,
that's
some
the bright
pain.
Side.
Yeah, sure is.
And like, I love Amy Poehler, obviously. That's somebody who I think is amazing. Like, she's just so
But you're sort of fascinated with the Sedaris.
But the Sedaris family, like, yeah. And like the way that they tell a story, like, I mean, he, of course, obviously, he's an amazing writer and he makes everything so funny. But her and the, I just think it's so interesting to have these kind of different artists come out of the same family and like the way that they express themselves.
Well, yeah, and then there's two other siblings that, you know,
you just never hear about it.
Oh, you hear about them, but they're not public personality.
Like, it's like Gretchen, like, I just like know her name, but I don't really know anything
about
it.
But you know the other guy, the, what's his name, Rooster or whatever that.
Oh, I don't really remember much about the brother.
The southern one, the one that's sort
of
like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I don't feel like I retain much. I'm always like looking for Amy's name and things.
Oh, right, right, right. No, the other brother's very funny character. All right. Well, listen to that on the road. I'm sure Scott will be thrilled to listen to that in the car. I'm sure there's nothing he likes more than to have Mark Maron podcast pumped in at all times.
I want to make him share a headphone splitter with me, and we'll just listen to you nonstop.
Yeah, put it right in the car. Who's going to be in the car? Paul, too?
Paul, yeah. I don't even, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Paul and Scott would just, they would jump at the opportunity to listen to as many WTFs as possible.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to make it happen. It'll be so great. No, I'll make them listen to our own episodes of Comedy Bang Bang. That'll be so
there
fun.
You go. All right. Well, have fun.
Thanks.
Thanks for talking.
Yeah, man.
Lauren Lapkus. She's a very well-adjusted comedic entertainer. And, sometimes she'll submerge into the character, and it's a little disconcerting in a good way. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for my tour dates. Go to WTFpod.com/merch for the merch. Go do whatever you got to do, right? Oh, man. I feel good. That's not a question.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.